cliffcentral.com.
Oi, oi, I am Siyabonga Beyile. I am back on the Threaded Exchange. Last week, the beautiful, amazing ladies of the Threaded Man did a Threaded takeover. You guys enjoyed it. You guys loved it. You were tweeting. We were trending. So thank you. Thank you very much. The ladies of the Threaded Man will be back again at the end of the month. So each and every month on the last week of the month, I'll always bring them to do a takeover without me. I think it's very important for women to have a space to talk about fashion, about style, and to be free. Today's show, I'm really excited. I'm nervous, but at the same time, I am really, really excited. I've got such a special guest. Marcel, do you want to introduce yourself, or should I introduce you?
I mean, you've been doing such a great job at introducing me the past couple of days. I feel like I'm going to let you head that for right now.
Okay, so Marcel Flores is one of the world's leading international bloggers. He has worked with brands such as Louis Vuitton, Hugo Boss. He walked the Dolce & Gabbana show in Milan about a couple of weeks ago. He is in South Africa currently. He was shooting for Hugo Boss in Cape Town. And yeah, and upon coming to Joburg, because of the power of Instagram, I follow him and he was like, hey, I need cool people to hang out in Joburg. So I hit him up and yeah, we've been friends since.
Yes, absolutely.
And the first thing we did together to introduce him to the Joburg life, I took him to Taboo.
And it was one hell of a night.
How was that experience?
One hell of a night.
How was
that experience? It was amazing. I love music and like everybody was dancing. It was good vibes. And I feel like there's not many ways to get to know a city better right away than going clubbing, and apparently one of the hottest clubs of the city, no less. So it was great. I had a great time.
Yeah. But didn't you think, I mean, let's start, like, this is the power of social media, right? Is that we had never met before. And I inboxed you. I was like, yo, I do this thing. I'm the Threaded Man. This is what I do. Let's hang out, whatever. And the first time we meet is at the club. Were you not afraid, like, I was going to kidnap you or you're going to get lost?
No,
I mean, you are 15 hours away from home. You see some random guy on Instagram and you decide to go to the club with him. What if I was some, like, weird dude?
I mean, chances are that you're weird, probably. But I like weird people. I'm not so worried. I'm a fairly trusting person. I don't know. There's something about my personality. I don't ever assume the worst. I usually assume the best. Yeah. And we were going to a club. I mean, come on. What are you going to do? Kill me in front of a bunch of people? I don't think so.
I remember, so on Friday, we went to Taboo. It was Black Coffee's birthday. I was also celebrating 5 years of The Threaded Man. And the music that on Friday night was predominantly house music, South African house music. And this New Yorker was just on the chairs, dancing. You have some rhythm.
I mean,
and
I
you
try.
Used to be a dancer.
I used to be. I feel like in here, in my heart, I still am, but I don't practice as much as I should. So I don't know if you can see it on the outside as much as I see it on the inside still, or feel it on the inside. Yeah. No, but it was amazing, especially like live African house drumming was absolutely amazing. Just to see that passion and that musicality and living the music was amazing. And how everybody really felt the vibes. It was fantastic.
Yeah. So far, how would you describe South Africa to a person in one word right now, so far, based on your experience?
In one word, I'm terrible at nailing, like drilling it down.
Give me five words. Let's try.
Not that that's any
five.
Better. I'm gonna start off with something that you probably won't like. It's very Australian to me. It's Australia. It reminds me so much of Australia, like the vibes, because people are so relaxed and super nice. Putting me on the spot. I don't know. Warm,
did they tell you before you came to Africa that we have like lions in our backyard? Did they tell you that we go to school on horses? Or did you actually did you have a preview of how did you imagine Africa before coming to Africa?
Okay, I get that. I feel like I imagined Africa, the image in my head was separate for what I thought Africa was and what I thought South Africa was. Because I feel like I was fairly aware of the fact that cities like Cape Town and Johannesburg are fairly well developed. Yeah. And it feels very European in a lot of or Western, you know, in a lot of ways. So my expectations of Africa were a lot different than what I had of South Africa, and it was actually pretty on par. I have a couple of friends that actually grew up here and then moved to New York, so a few of my friends are from South Africa, and you know, like we're all pretty similar. I feel like we're all, you know, like into chill. I'm a positive guy, and I feel like that's one of the major things I like about being down here. Everybody's super friendly, everybody's super nice and welcoming and open-hearted, and that's one of the best things.
I think that's the most incredible thing about the internet is that because we live such world apart, we always assume we are so different, and we always assume that you live in a completely different world to mine. But then as you and I got to spend more time together this past weekend and talk about style and talk about, you know, photography, our interests, you realize in a lot of this, we are actually quite the same, but in just different worlds, which is, I think, is incredible. But on the Thread Exchange, as you all know, this show is about teaching people. You know, this platform is about other young creatives in South Africa who want to learn from other creatives. And in South Africa, we have a lot of young Black South Africans who want to be in the creative space, such as fashion and blogging, but they feel like it's not accessible to them, you know?
Right.
And a lot of them don't know where to start. They don't know what to do. They don't know how to grow their followers on Instagram. It's in our country. It's not where it is in New York,
right.
You know? So I think my purpose with you on today's show is just diving into your journey. You know, how did you become this superstar of a blogger? You know, you are now on a Louis Vuitton, you're shooting a Hugo Boss campaign that's going up in stores. So I want to just go back in time and go through your journey, what you've learned, how did you come up to where you are? Because you're one of the few bloggers that started in your era that is still relevant today, you know?
Right.
I feel, you know, when you started, you're on lookbook.nu, but from there, you've just been able to readapt your brand with the changing times. With Snapchat, with Instagram, you've been able, with whatever platform that comes out, you find a way to always, you know, readapt your brand. And not a lot of bloggers internationally can do that. There's only a few of you that I can name.
Right.
So, Marcel, where did it start for you?
Okay,
where were
I mean,
you born?
Let's start there. If you hear an accent in my English, you guys out there, if you hear an accent, it's because I'm German. I was born and raised in Germany. I was born in Stuttgart, and I lived there until the age of 20 before I moved to New York City. I always was kind of like the odd kid out growing up, especially in Germany. Germany is a fairly conservative country, culturally also. So I expressed myself through fashion fairly early on. So I was a kid that was walking around in silver baggy jeans. I'm not saying I was well-dressed. I just said I'm expressing myself through fashion. At the age of 13, 14, and people were always kind of like, not made fun of me, but like they took note of it. Not necessarily in the most positive way. So for me, it was kind of an escape out of Germany to get into a place where I felt more creatively safe, where I felt like I could express myself without any boundaries, without any limitations or the fear of being judged afterwards. So New York is obviously one of the main destinations for that in the world. And yeah.
But why fashion? You know, what... You know, I personally, I'm bad at talking about my feelings. I'm bad at talking about emotions. And I find humans particularly very weird. I struggle to relate to humans. And for me, fashion was that medium where I felt I could express myself fully. And also, it's my way of understanding people. Just by looking at how you dress, I get to know who you are as a person and what you like. I can tell that you OCD, how you place your watch and your accessories, for example,
right,
without even talking. So for you, what was it about fashion that drew you to it? What connected you to it?
Yeah, so before it was any conscious decision that I made, it was really for me, I was a fairly insecure kid. Again, I was the odd one out even before fashion or around that. I felt like I never quite fit in the environment that I was in. And fashion was actually, I tend to describe fashion as my emotional armor.
Yeah.
It's something that gave me confidence because as I started dressing better, you know, after the experimental phase and then my outfits actually started to look kind of good, people noticed and people, as you said, you know, people perceive other people through fashion. We had this conversation over drinks last night. I definitely believe that clothes do make the man. I do think so, because you can't help but have certain feelings about a person based on how they dress.
Yeah.
So when people started being more positive to me because of my clothes, I felt like fashion is what gave me the confidence to really embrace who I am, to live my, you know, my own life as I, as me.
Yeah.
And that was my emotional connection to fashion, but that had nothing to do with my professional decisions, like my career decisions. In the beginning, it was more so I after high school, I went to become a dancer, a professional dancer for 2 years.
What kind of dance are we talking? Oh, were you a male stripper?
I mean, obviously.
Were you a ballerina? So
we're talking Magic Mike full on. I was like, no.
There's a strip club called The Summit. I can take you down there.
Oh, fantastic. Let's go there tonight. I'm looking forward to it. No, I started out with ballroom, and from there, I went into MTV video clip dancing is what it was called. So basically hip hop, but then I went into true hip hop.
So you're doing the salsa.
Well, yeah, tango and all that, waltz and like the traditional dances.
Hectic.
Yeah, that was the beginning of it all, and then I went more into old school hip hop house, locking, popping. It's like the traditional hip hop dances.
Yeah.
And then from there, I wanna
interject. I wanna stop you right there.
Okay.
So I want the audience to pay attention carefully. Is that, you know, they see you now as this famous finished product, but you had to start somewhere. And you started as a dancer, you know?
I mean, I wouldn't consider myself finished. I don't think anybody should ever consider themselves finished.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But I mean, as not necessarily finished, but I mean, you know, a lot of people look at you now, they see that you're famous, and they don't know that to get to where you are today or to get where you're going to be, there's a lot of work that goes into it. And sometimes in this journey called life is that you have to start somewhere to end up where you want to be. So you didn't right off the bat become an international blogger. You were a dancer.
No,
you
know? I mean, sorry.
Did you move to New York to dance?
I didn't. Just one quick comment about that. I think I just always followed my heart. You know, it doesn't matter. Like at that time, I wanted to dance. I knew that I wasn't going to dance for the rest of my life, but it did actually end up bringing me to where I am now, because the first time I went to New York was to take dance classes.
Oh,
I went there for 3 weeks with my best friend, one of my best friends from Germany, who's another dancer. And in 3 weeks, we managed to take one class. The rest of the time, we spent falling in love with the city and like, I don't
Partying
know,
go, up, go,
no, actually
fun.
Not that, well, yeah, we went out a couple times and we danced there, but that doesn't necessarily count as classes, you know? It was then when I kind of stopped to think about, okay, obviously you don't want to do dance for the rest of your life and you love the city. So I went to NYU because I looked into psychology and I'm very interested in psychology. I'm very interested in numbers. And I just decided that after I had a little discussion with the people at admissions, I didn't want to drop the art out of my life entirely. You know, I was a dancer. I was full-time dancing 40 hours a week at that point for a year. And I didn't want to lose the art entirely. So I wasn't going to focus just on psychology. So I was walking in my head. I'm pretty sure I'm changing it up. I'm pretty sure it was 6th Avenue, but I like to say it was 7th Avenue because 7th Avenue is Fashion Avenue in New York, right?
Yeah.
So I was walking along the street by myself after NYU. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, you like psychology, you like art/fashion, and you like numbers. What can you do with your life? Like, what's going to be your next step? And I came up with the term fashion marketing, as marketing combines numbers and psychology and fashion. You know, within the fashion industry, you have that's the creative space.
Oh, wow.
So I went back to my hostel. I Googled fashion marketing NYC and I stumbled upon the university/the college that I ended up studying at.
Oh, wow. So do you view what you're doing as fashion marketing? Do you believe, similarly as a Vogue magazine would be a marketing avenue for brands, you feel that One Dapper Street is also a legitimate platform to market a brand?
Absolutely.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. I've never actually heard it like that before. And I think that's something kind of can really relate to you as well, is that I loved fashion going into it, but I think what drew me most into it was the fact that I realized that there was a gap in the market in South Africa where I knew that magazines would be dying. I knew sort of retail would be struggling and digital was the way to go. And I felt like my platform needed to be the go-to place for brands and the go-to place for consumers to interact, you know, with style and with fashion. So now you moved from Germany. At what age did you move?
I was 20.
You were 20 and you moved to New York. You enrolled at the fashion marketing school.
Yeah.
Now tell me, how do you move from that to becoming One Dapper Street?
Okay.
Let's talk us through that journey.
Okay. So I like to go for anything I'm doing 100%, 110%. So when I enrolled at FIT, that's the name of the school, Fashion Institute of Technology, I wanted to make the most out of every possible experience I could get my fingers on. So in the beginning it was very rough because the first year you're not allowed to intern, and I was just kind of like, you know, wasting my time. I didn't have much to do. The second year I interned, I had a part-time job. I was taking 21 credits, so like basically as much as I possibly could. And I was at my maximum. Then I had a little bit of a low.
Yeah.
There was one semester where, I don't know, the third year you're allowed to not intern again. It's a whole political thing. I don't even know. But basically, I had only 16 credits, so I had a lot of time. I didn't have a part-time job, and I didn't have any internships. So I found myself with a lot of time on my hands, and I felt like I needed to do something with it. That was right around the time that I met my ex-girlfriend. she already had a blog, and she, you know, she knew a lot about photography. She knew about Lookbook. She was actually the one who kind of introduced me to Lookbook in terms of how to get big on it. So she taught me a lot. She taught me about my creative eye. She was an architect, so she taught me a lot about design and angles. So she was my creative inspiration, my muse, if you will, right before I started my blog. At the same time, one of my best friend's best friend was a blogger as well. I wasn't very close with him, but through my best friend, I heard a lot about what he was doing. He was a Gillette brand ambassador traveling all over Canada. He was working with shoe companies and tailored suiting companies and getting product for free and getting paid to do this. And I got intrigued. So I knew that you could make money with it. And through Lisa, I knew the name of my ex-girlfriend. I knew I had access to the creative resources I needed to make it happen. So I set out, it was about 2 weeks prior to my actual launch date, I set a date, and I said, okay, by that date, I want to have my content ready, I'm going to have my website ready, and I'm going to start blogging. So together with Lisa, we were shooting each other every day. So she had her own blog, and I shot her for that on a daily basis, and she shot me for my blog on a daily basis, and we did that for 2 years straight. So 2 years went by without me missing a single day of putting up a blog post, including 8 to 12 DSLR images and like two paragraphs of text.
And at what point did you realize that this could be commercially viable for you? Because, I mean, right now you're a full-time blogger, right?
Right.
And you make a living, you travel all around the world. So at what point were you like, oh, I could make money from this?
Again, I knew that that in general it's possible. Before I even started, I wanted it to be a brand marketing tool from the beginning, because I'm not because I wanted to sell it.
So the business is something you're always conscious of when you were doing this?
I'm not only conscious of, but passionate about. I enjoy the business aspect of what I'm doing very much. It's not for me about like, oh, I need to make this money. I thoroughly enjoy promoting brands that I think are putting out a great product, because again, it ties back to, if you're putting out a great product, you're allowing people to dress well, which allows people to feel great. So I don't know, for me, fashion is a way to make the world a happier place in a sense. So I knew that you could make money from day zero, basically. But the first time for me personally, I kind of had a glimpse that might turn into something was about 9 months in. I think I was at about 20,000 followers when I got my first big gig with Details Magazine, made Rest in Peace. It folded late last year, unfortunately. I liked it. Yeah. I liked it a lot.
Wait, but so you are on 20,000. You are now almost on 400,000, right? Or half a million, if I'm not...
No, 360.
360.
Yeah, 356.
Wow. And I checked yesterday. This guys, it's actually quite lit. So yesterday, I'm looking through my profile. I mean, I have 40,000 followers. So I'm going through my profile. I'm like, oh, I gained 200 followers today or whatever. He shows me on how many followers he gained in a week. 23,000. I couldn't believe it.
Well, that's because I did a giveaway, though. That's
23,000 followers in 1 week. That is crazy.
It's crazy for me, too. Trust me. I just told you that I gained those over 9 months. So you know, to think that it just took less than 7 days to add that on, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah. And then let's talk about now that people know a bit about your story, I want to open up a nice debate and a nice discussion. I think as a South African, you know, I'm an influencer as well. I run a blog, and most of the time we look at to guys like you that work with brands, that travel around the world, and we look at how brands interact with us here at home. And we're always like, why can't, you know, Louis Vuitton in South Africa treat me like a one Dapper Street? You know, why don't they want to pay us? They just want to give us gifts. And I want to today try connect the threads that are similar. Because I mean, us, when we were talking yesterday, and I was like, the biggest challenge for me, especially in South Africa, is that people think we don't like fashion here, that we don't consume fashion. So brands never want to pay. They always just want to give us product in exchange for a post. I want to know if you have similar struggles, and how do you deal with those struggles? So when you work with a brand, you know, do you struggle to get paid by the brand, or at this point in time, every single brand that you back pays you?
Well, first of all, I don't think necessarily the reason for why brands aren't as willing to pay here in South Africa is not that they don't think that, you know, the African market is not there. I think it's more about brands just being slow in adapting to social media marketing altogether, globally, aside from the fashion capitals like New York, London, Paris and Milan are kind of on the radar as well. I mean, it's not... I've been doing this for 4 years. I've had my struggles. The amount of conversations that I've had to try and explain why I should be getting paid to do this job is countless. because people didn't understand. You know, like anybody is willing to pay a photographer.
You have 360,000 followers. What's there not to understand?
No, but it's more than that. So it's the marketing aspect, yes. But you're paying for a photographer. You're paying for a model. You're paying for a stylist. You're paying for hair and makeup if you want to. With girls, more so than with me. You know, I don't wear so much makeup. You get so many jobs in one, and every single one you would pay, but just because they're all in one, you wouldn't want to pay. It's really weird.
I think just to give audience a con, I think that's something actually brand managers that are listening. What Marcel has highlighted here is that as a blogger, the same way you would pay an agency to do a photo shoot, to do marketing, it's a blogger does all that. A blogger is a stylist because you style yourself. You're a creative director because you direct where you want to shoot. You're a location scouter. You scout your own location. You're also a vlogger. You edit your own videos. You shoot your own videos. And after all that work, you still have your channels, which you post all this work to in order to reach the consumer and the audience.
Exactly.
And I don't know, you know, why brands don't necessarily get that.
Well, it's because of the way blogs started out. You know, when it was blog, you know, web blog, when people started out talking about things they were passionate about, it was more about reviewing. You know, it was more about, okay, this is a product for free, and it was an authentic review of the product. Outcome positive or negative didn't really matter. It was about that. So that's how blogging started out. And that's why that mindset is still there, that, you know, you shouldn't pay them. But again, I view it a little bit differently. I think any exposure is good exposure, whether it's negative or no. If I'm talking about it to 300,000 people, it's not necessarily great. You know, it's not like you can buy me. Like I've turned down jobs. If I don't like the product, I've turned down jobs before. But I would just like to, I don't know. It's really difficult to connect it in your head, honestly, because blogging as it is now is somewhere in between PR and marketing. It's really difficult. Yeah. While the old blogs were true PR, and then magazines, you know,
I think what you're also trying to say is that the role of blogging has changed in a sense.
Exactly.
That what I've seen from you, what I've seen from Ami Song, what I've seen from Blake Scott, what I've seen from Steve Anonja, what I've seen from Danny, you know, is that you guys have... At the time when blogging started, blogging was seen as another cool avenue for people to express themselves.
Right.
It wasn't seen as a marketing avenue. And I think looking at your growth in terms of the numbers you have pulled, in terms of the interest, in terms of the engagement rate, you guys are now rivaling magazines, if not surpassing them.
Exactly.
And I think that's now why blogging has become marketing. It's no longer PR, where it's like, oh, let's just throw gifts and see it. But you guys are now a business because you speak to close to 1 million people across all your platforms, which is a huge amount of audience. And that audience engages with you on a daily basis. And for a magazine to get that much engagement right now is close to impossible, because people follow you because they can relate to what you put out. They want to wear what you wear. They want to hear your opinion. Whereas a magazine, it's a lot of people giving opinions. It's not necessarily, you know, a Marcel who I trust, who I see and follow the growth.
The personal relationship,
you know,
is very important.
Audience, consumers get to follow you on your journey. And I think that's where the marketing is. It's about how do brands see what you're doing and how can they connect to what you're doing?
Yeah. And I mean, one of the fallacies is really to believe that magazines act completely differently. Like, yes, you have editorials, but there's also paid ads in every magazine.
Exactly.
And if you believe that there's not any single relationship between who pays for ads and gets also featured in editorials, then you might be, willingly overlooking a few of the details. So, you know, going back to it, going back to your original question of how hard it is for me to now get paid by brands, I work with some brands for free, especially a lot of upcoming brands that I want to push.
Why? So how? Okay, this is such a good one. So I'm learning here as well.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. So when a brand approaches you, how do you know that this brand has to pay me, or this brand it's okay if they don't pay me? So when they don't pay you, why don't they pay you, and why are you okay with that?
I mean, it's a case by case. There's not really anything I can respond to that's going to be a general answer to that.
Yeah.
But you get a feeling. Like, obviously, I have a set of managers, I have an agency, and they overlook everything I do. So I loop them into every conversation.
So you have a management that manages your bookings and everything.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you
they
never
do.
Communicate with brands
I
directly.
I like to be a part of it. As I said, I'm very passionate about the business side of it. So I like to be involved in the communication, but my managers are always also involved.
Yeah.
So they will always try and push money, right? Because they get a cut from it. Like any agency, of course, they want to make money as much as anybody does. But when they come basically, when they try and the brand says, sorry, we don't have any budget, like a lot of them are upcoming brands. And if I really like the product, I'll tell my management, hey, listen, I know, like, let me take this back over. If it's not paid, they don't have to worry about it. I'll try and execute it myself.
So if a Nike comes to you and say, we don't have budget, you know it's a lot.
Exactly.
So you wait according to that. So you
exactly.
do research.
It's a game. It's a game a little bit. Like, and you get a feeling for it. Is somebody trying to play you, or is somebody just genuinely, you know, genuinely at the limit of their means, and is trying to like make it happen? And you know, I know it's rough. Like, I worked my ass off to get to where I am now, and I know that I was reaching my limits. And if there wasn't other people that were helping me out, if there wasn't other big Instagram accounts at the time that had promoted me, I wouldn't be where I am today. Like, I would never be the one to say I've gotten to where I am today just because of me. I think everybody relies on the help of others and on the goodwill of others. And I like to give back the same thing because, I mean, in the end, it makes me happy to help others anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it's worth it, if it's a good and innovative product that I actually want people to know about, there's no money involved necessarily.
Okay.
When it's bigger brands, it's also, again, they're not necessarily paying for me to wear it. I would wear it regardless.
Yeah.
But what they're paying for is the photography, is the material that they're getting,
production to run this
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. So
your rent is not going to want exposure
exactly.
at the end of the month.
Yes. And the thing is, I think that people think that you can buy my fashion, like my fashion sense, or like my authenticity.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. You pay for the work that I put in, not for me to wear.
Yeah.
You know, like to wear the clothes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like you changed my mind with money. And I think that's a really, really big and important thing, that because I know, unfortunately, too many bloggers or wannabe bloggers, you know, do that. You know, they sell out. And I won't say that I've never done that before, because you have to make mistakes and learn from them. It's happened to me before that I looked to the money over what I actually thought about the product. But I've learned from it, and I won't make that mistake anymore, you know?
I think also another thing that I can relate with you on, especially in South Africa, because, you know, blogging for us is still a new and exciting thing. Everyone's excited about fashion. Everyone wants to post their outfit of the day on Instagram.
Right.
And within that, you get a lot of people that start blogging for the wrong reasons. And wrong reasons, I mean, people can chow my head off for saying this, but the reasons of, I want to be famous, I want to go to cool events, and in a sense, that spoils for the rest of us who want to do this as a business, because when I speak to a brand, I'm like, listen, you know, I'm charging 50,000 rand for me to do an advertorial review, whatever, then they'll be like, yeah, but so-and-so said they could do it for free. And that's always the challenge I find locally in South Africa, is that you step into brand, they feel that it's okay to just give gifts and not pay, because there's a large group of people who are willing to accept that because they want the free clothing, they want to be at these events.
Yes.
And then for us who treat this as a business, and for us who want to grow this platform, we get there, we're like, listen, this is how we do things, this is what we charge. And they're like, well, why should I pay you when so-and-so is doing it for free? And I'm always like, but because the quality is different, and because there's a whole business plan and strategy behind what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm not just being famous. And I think that's also the trick, is that today anyone can get 10,000 followers on Instagram. You know, everyone can make beautiful pictures now.
Right.
So it's actually getting even tougher.
It's true. But if I can give you a piece of advice, just wait it out. It's quality will outlast lowballing competition that's trying to just, I don't know. I feel like, honestly, it depends on how you view fashion. And I know that you view fashion as something more important than something simply superficial.
Yeah.
If you do that, everything you create has a different feeling. Everything you create has a different character, because it has meaning.
Yeah.
It's not about the brand. It's not about the price tag. It's about making people feel good through fashion. I think that's what has longevity.
Yeah.
And I know it gets rough. I know it gets hard. And trust me, I've had many, many email responses that went, oh, why should we pay him this much if a guy that has five times his following only charges a fifth?
Yeah.
And I think to myself, well, I'm feeling sorry for that guy, because while this brand might not be paying that, I have a lot of brands that are paying me my fee. And it's also just, it's about the quality of following. You know, again, since day one, I focused my content on the clothes that I was wearing. It was not necessarily about me. Yes, I was wearing it and I was putting it together, but it was also always about the fashion. So now my following is largely male and it's very fashion focused.
Yeah.
So while you might have a guy that has a million followers, a lot of his followers might be young girls that are in love with him. You know what I mean? So it's a lot about curating your audience, and that's something you can sell more easily. Yeah. Rather than just a total number. Not all brands will go for that. Not all brands are smart enough to question as much, to interrogate and to really get to the root of why other people are paying me my fee, you know?
Wow.
But it's just it's a lot of patience.
Yeah. Cool, guys. Just to remind you, you can B, it's not just about myself and Marcel talking. Please do interact with us. Our WhatsApp number is 079-748-2090. If I'm not mistaken, there we go. So please WhatsApp us, ask any questions. I'm going to also be talking to Marcel more about his business. You know, does he want to grow One Dapper into an empire? Does he want to become the next Ralph Lauren? And if so, how will he be taking those steps? And also just debating whether, you know, other bloggers have photographers and all these teams, and Marcel is a one-man show, and his girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
So I wanna, and his brand is doing really well. So I also just want to ask him about, you know, should bloggers invest in having a huge team, or, you know, should you just keep it between you and another person? So I wanna understand that. So we'll be back on the other side of this.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Threaded Exchange with Siya Beile, live on Cliff Central.
Cool. If you've just tuned in, this is Siyabonga Beile live on the Threaded Exchange. I'm here today with a very special guest, Marcel Flores. Did I say it correctly?
Yes.
Oh, no, I don't have the German accent.
That's okay. I don't have a
German accent. Okay, I sound Russian now. So we're talking everything about blogging. Marcel is one of the world's top bloggers. He has almost 400,000 followers on Instagram. He speaks to close to 1 million people across all his platforms. He has worked with brands like Louis Vuitton. He was in Cape Town the other day shooting for Hugo Boss. He's one of the new faces who's going to go up in stores. Hopefully we see him in South Africa. And he recently walked for the Dolce & Gabbana show at Milan Menswear Week as part of the DJ Millennial show. So this guy is a jet setter all around the world. Probably one of my top two male bloggers in the world.
Hey,
between you and Adam,
I didn't know that. Hey,
I am Gala and you are like the guys. And it was so crazy this weekend. Everyone was like, that's the thing. Like, how do you feel about it? Like, especially in South Africa where guys don't necessarily say they see you from Instagram or your website. They're like, oh, I remember you from lookbook.edu.
Yeah,
like,
that's ridiculous.
And more than one person. How crazy. How does that make you feel?
Amazing, honestly. You know, my very beginnings were on Lookbook, and it was where I put all my focus, all my energy, like almost more so than Instagram, because Lookbook is where the other Instagram accounts, big Instagram accounts, pulled my looks from and then posted them on Instagram. So it was my main platform. And I was on it. It was actually my first real blogging experience before I even knew what blogging was, because I was following people like Adam. I was following Mike Q and like all these guys on Lookbook. And I didn't know that you can make money. Like, they first exposed me to blogging. I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
Until I finally managed to find my way into the industry and like got my hype. Hey.
Yeah.
But that was so long ago. That stopped about two and a half years ago. And it was awesome to have people come up and be like, hey, I know you from Lookbook.
Yeah.
It's just cool. It made me feel very nostalgic.
Did you ever think South Africans would know who you are or follow your journey?
No.
Have you ever imagined?
I mean, I've thought about it, and then I looked into my analytics and I saw that about 1% of my following maybe is from South Africa. So I very small. Or I don't remember it even necessarily showing up. So I knew for a fact that I don't have a big following here. But you know, I mean, obviously I met you and you introduced it, like that people would know me in your circle makes a lot more sense, because you're the menswear guy, and it makes sense here, but I just didn't expect it at all.
Yeah. But it was incredible. I think last night a friend of mine, Mikhail, was just saying, oh my god, I can't believe I'm actually meeting you, because I've been following this guy on Lookbook for the longest time.
Yeah.
And one of also our good friends, the great Dutch, who's also an influencer, like, oh my god, like, this is like, I remember yesterday he was just like, how is it possible that this guy is sitting in front of me? and that's another thing about blogging. Did you think that having all these followers online would make you famous? Because whether you like to admit it or not, you are actually famous and people do know who you are.
Right.
And does that always catch you off balance, or does it shock you? How does that make you feel?
I'm surprised by it at times. Yes, I am. But at the end of the day, I mean, I honestly, I enjoy it. I don't mean for this to sound cocky or anything, yeah. but I don't know if you're into what do you call it? Zodiac sign.
Zodiac sign.
Yeah, I'm a Leo, and you know Leos like to be in the spotlight. They like to be the center of it.
I'm a Sagittarius.
I don't know anything about you.
I'm complicated. That's what you
okay.
know.
All right. I get that. I can see that.
Yeah.
I love to be in the spotlight because not because I love being famous, but because I love having the influence and having being able to have an impact on people's lives. Because I would like to think that I make the most of it and try and better their lives, you know, make them smile, make them laugh, make them be more positive. That's my tagline for One Dapper Street since the first day has been share your passion, because I'm blogging because I was sharing my passion and I wanted to inspire other people to do the same, because in my opinion, that's the way to true happiness. If you find your passion and you bring it to the world, if you're able to share it. So that's that, you know, I think fame for the sake of fame is not great, but fame, or, you know, fame for the sake of influence, for the sake of reaching people and trying to make the best of it, trying to change the world for the better, is a reasonable goal.
Yeah,
you know?
And that is incredible. I think I won't lie. I'm still battling with the fame thing, especially in South Africa.
I saw you yesterday.
Because the thing is, people think I'm probably like a dick, but I'm not. I really enjoy people, but sometimes it's like it's a thing of, you know, we put out these pictures online of our outfits and everything, and people paint a picture of who we are in their minds, how we speak, how we carry ourselves. And so when someone meets you in public, they already have an idea of who you are. And when you start speaking, I'm always afraid of like disappointing them because they have this picture. So I'm always nervous. I'm always like, am I dressed well today? And also I have bad days like any other human. So sometimes I'm like not really dressed well. So I'm just like, I'm not dressed well today.
But
and
so then, is everybody.
And I meet someone, I'm like, oh, I'm disappointing you. So I'm still trying to own up to the space, and you know, I'm at the 40,000 follower mark now, so I'm still trying to adapt to the space. And you know, I think it's something I'm very conscious of, is that I don't want to be famous just because I am who I am or because of my good looks. Not that I'm saying I have good looks, but is that I want to be famous or be well known for changing people's lives, for enriching their lives, especially through fashion. And I think most of the time fashion is seen as this frivolous glamour thing, and I think I like to say all the time that, you know, fashion has a magic of giving us confidence when you're going for that job interview, you know, or when you're meeting your favorite girl, your crush, which you met my crush this weekend. Sorry, I got nervous that I hit the mic. You see my crush this weekend. Shout out to Lola. So you always want to put your best foot forward, and that's the magic of fashion. It's about forming an identity of who you are and putting your best foot forward. And we were having a debate last night about putting on a suit. You know, I always say, as you've said as well, is that our suit, the kind of wars that we fight today and the kind of struggles as men that we fight today, a suit is like our modern day armor. It's what we wear to go to our daily wars.
Yeah.
And you know, when I wear a suit and I step into a boardroom, I'm like, no one's gonna tell me shit today.
True. No,
like
it's
this
true.
Morning, so this morning I had a big presentation at a big brand, and I wore my suit. I was like,
You look fantastic today, man.
And I was like, fuck it, I'm gonna kill it. Yeah. You know, and that's the confidence that a suit gives me. And people treat you differently when you wear a suit as well.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's approximately 50-50. People treat you differently because of the suit, but also people treat you differently because of how the suit makes you feel. So they treat you differently because of you. Because you walk in there and you feel confident as shit. So everybody's going to feel you. And then they're seeing the suit on top of that. You know what I mean? So it's like...
And also think about it. Also another thing, guys, as a word of advice, women love men in suits.
You can that is never, the truest thing.
You can never go wrong. You could be the guy with the most tattoos. You could be the guy with the longest dirty hair. Literally, the moment you put on a suit, you tie your head back and you be like, Molo Sisi, she's gone. She's yours. Or you say, hey, she's gone. So I'm telling you now, if you want to go on a date, wear a suit. Like, it sends the biggest statement.
I agree.
So diving more into One Dapper Street, you know, I see two contrasting trends that are happening in blogging internationally, is that on the other end, you've got your Chiara Ferragni, who has a team of like a gazillion people. I don't even lost count. And they've become an agency. They consult for brands. They have a clothing line and everything. And then I look at guys like, you know, I Am Gala, Adam. I look at you. I look at Ami Song, where your team is pretty tight.
Yeah.
But you also run quite big brands.
Right.
You know, was that a strategic thing for you not to hire a whole entire huge team and keep it small?
Well,
or has it just happened by coincidence that you you know, you didn't invest in having a big team or a big office or,
it,
you know.
It more so hasn't happened by coins, you know, like it just hasn't happened. Like, yeah. I feel like building a team doesn't just happen. You need to set out to do it.
Yeah.
And to set out to do it, you need to have motivation. You need to have a reason to do it. And personally, I don't know. I mean, we'll get into that in a second, but I started a shoe brand and I'm doing videos and stuff. Like, I could be hiring a video editor, you know?
Yeah.
I could hire somebody who manages a shoe brand, but like, I like to be involved in all things. I like to stay busy. I am a workaholic. I enjoy work. And that's the other thing about following your passion. If you do what you're passionate about, you won't work for a single day in your life, as they say. So it's a choice. I've tried working with other people, you know. I've hired assistants, and it's just kind of, I have a really hard time delegating.
Is it because you're German? Because I find that German people are very like, things need to be specific at this time.
Yeah,
so do you think you're like a difficult person to work with?
I mean, I don't think I'm a difficult person to work with because I'm a very nice guy, even in my work relationships, but I think I'm very hard to please. I think I'm very hard, you know, it's very hard to get it right so that I have nothing to say about it, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's been an issue a little bit in the past. But I do work with other photographers on the regular basis. A lot of them are my friends. I pay them because I like to, you know, I like to share the wealth, so to speak. You know, if I'm getting paid for a collaboration, I think my friend who's doing the work should be paid as well.
Yeah.
When I work with my girlfriend, obviously, there's no money involved because I shoot her, she shoots me, and it's kind of like a give and take.
Yeah.
But I do work with a good amount of people. We also have a licensor team for our shoe company. So there's another team involved that's working there. So there is people, but none of them are working directly for me. It's more like it's based on contracts and like freelance.
Yeah.
Kind of.
And diving into, you know, about your business, I mean, as you said, you have a lot of interest, and one of that is shoemaking.
Yes.
Tell me more about that. And I mean, as a blogger, I mean, I'm also heading down that route where I want to launch my own brand, and everyone's asking me, will I be starting a brand? You know, what is the idea? And sometimes I feel a bit, is it the right time? Is it not the right time? Do I have enough followers to drive sales? So what was it that made you think, oh my gosh, me and Ankari can start this shoe brand and we can just sell it directly? Because the moment you start producing product, you now start competing with some of your clients now.
Yes.
So how do you find that fine line, or how do you do that crossover swiftly without ruining your paycheck?
Okay, so let me give you a quick background on the shoe company and the brand story, really. So one of my best friends, Moti Ankari, he's a blogger as well, and him and I kind of developed the idea. It was his creative idea, and then we kind of developed it together to create 7 pairs of shoes for 7 days of the week. The issue that we both found with the industry is that everybody, like a lot of brands, have 2-3 amazing pairs, and then they have approximately 50 more to please the mass market. But there's not a single brand that drilled it down to just beautiful pairs of shoes, nothing more, nothing less. So that's what we wanted to create. So it was more about a curation rather than creating something new. So we went for 7 classic styles that we believed every man should have in his closet, going from Monday with a broked wingtip, you know, very formal, towards the end of the week where on a Saturday we have a sneaker, on a Sunday we have a combat boot. Like, we kind of told a story of a man throughout his week and every day. So basically you need those 7 shoes, nothing more, nothing less. With that said, it also eliminated some of the difficulties we were facing with working with with other brands, because brands usually have a fashion collection, a seasonal fashion collection. So we didn't see much of an issue, much of a conflict if we were working with other brands, as long as we stayed away from their classic styles, because we have our own classics.
Yeah.
And then we kept working with other brands, for
more unique styles. So no brands have
styles. Emailed
you and said, hey, yes, you have a shoe brand, you're competing with us. Oh, they've been supportive to your growth?
Yes, actually, some have been very supportive, which has been wonderful. You know, like it was always a little bit of a weird feeling. You know, I was in Italy with Todd's shooting a video for them in their factory. And, you know, I told them, you know, I'm creating my own shoe line. And they were like, oh my God, that's so exciting. Congratulations. So it was really, really nice to see that. I think, you know, for one, we're not Todd's price point. We're at about $250 to $300. So we're significantly lower. But it's also just, you know, it's a big market. And I think a lot of these brands are very confident in the market share that they do have. I don't know. It's not been as negative as it's been awkward sometimes.
Yeah.
Because, you know, him and I both were on a footwear shoot the day after we launched our collection.
Oh, wow.
It was a little bit awkward, you know, that you could feel the tension in the air, but it was not bad by any means. And the brand relationship since has also relaxed. So it's been surprisingly easy.
Yeah. Jumping into also you know, the brands, you work with a number of brands.
Yeah.
You know, you work with a lot of brands.
Yeah.
I mean, the list is endless.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm always going to draw it back to South Africa with what I face, because it's nice to get that input from you.
Yeah.
In South Africa, you know, we don't have a lot of brands. We don't have a gazillion brands.
Right.
But we do have a handful amount of brands. And most of the time, brands in South Africa want a lot of the bloggers here to commit to that brand without paying them an endorsement fee. So a brand will be like, I'm not going to mention names because I did last year and I got into trouble. But, you know, Cliff Central and Co., we will say to you, listen, we're going to give you cool product. We're going to give you this. And you can't wear any other brand. But we're not paying you. But we want you to be there. And, like, has that ever happened to you? And, you know, and secondly, a lot of the brands, because we work, like, especially me, I work with a number of brands, whether I'm consulting, whether I'm this. And brands will be saying, I'm a brand whore. And then I'll be like, but as a human being, as a consumer, I don't wear one brand. It's impossible.
Exactly.
I love lots of brands. I love different stuff. I like to shop at Woolworths. I want to shop at Edgar's.
Yes.
I want to shop at Hugo Boss. I want to shop at Louis Vuitton. I like brand. I'm a human being. And they don't understand that consumers also wear various brands. So if Marcel's only wearing Louis Vuitton every single day for a year, that doesn't make sense because it's impossible to do that.
Yeah.
So do you face those troubles that side? And what is your input to brands saying that bloggers work with too many brands?
Okay, so to tackle the first question, I don't think I've ever faced this situation where somebody asked me for exclusivity without offering any money. I don't think that happened, at least not for just fashion, you know, maybe for a watch company or something. Exclusivity, I have to agree with you. It's I understand it from a business aspect, and I do it when it's a very limited amount of, like a small time range. I don't like to do an exclusivity over a year because that's not who I am. Even before I was blogging, I was wearing, you know, I had growing up as a 13-year-old kid, I had 40, 50 pairs of shoes, like more than most girls in my class. I like variety. I like changing it up, and it doesn't make sense for me to be exclusive. Every now and then I do have exclusive contracts, but they wouldn't usually exceed 3 months.
Yeah.
And to that point, I would never consider myself a brand whore. It's not because you can't buy any of that. I feel like you're a brand whore if you just wear different brands because you're being bought. That's kind of the definition of the second part of the word.
Yeah.
I would have lived like that to begin with. You know, I would have maybe invested in a pair of $600 sneakers.
Yeah.
And then my allowance was gone.
So I would
wear the rest of the outfit would be H&M and Zara and Topman. Yeah. And that's okay. But, you know.
Yeah. You see, that's what's so crazy for me is that, like, in South Africa, it's something that we face on a daily basis with brands, where brands just want us to commit to them and not want to pay. And I just don't get it. Why? I'm just like, you know, you don't ask a magazine to be exclusive to you. You don't ask Vogue magazine to just do Nike. So a blogger is also a marketing medium that has to be not only transparent, but also has to be driven by the person's opinion, whereas the person's opinion is about, I wear various brands as CRB, I like to wear Edgar's, I like to wear everything,
right.
But I just don't understand where they're getting that notion or idea from, because you can't ask Cristiano Ronaldo to be a Nike sports player and only wear Nike but not pay him. It doesn't make sense.
Right. I think you have to take into consideration the fact that this is a very young industry.
Yeah.
And there's always going to be people trying to make the most of it, trying to play whoever they can. You know, naive is kind of a negative connotation, but like the beginners that don't know what they're doing yet and that are head over heels when they get an opportunity like that. And I think there's still people and brands out there that kind of, they know they should be paying, but they also know that there's people out there that they can trick into a contract like that. And I think, you know, I think it's just people trying to be businessy in a negative way.
Wow.
I mean, I don't know.
That's life-changing insight for me.
I honestly don't know. I'm going to be completely honest. This is the first time this thought has occurred to me. I've talked about this a lot. It just popped into my head. But I think that could be a valid explanation because I don't think people are stupid. Like, if you're in business and you're quite, like, I don't think people are stupid. As you said, nobody would go up to Cristiano Ronaldo or Vogue or GQ and ask for exclusivity without paying. Like, they I think they realize that there's value involved. So,
I think South Africans, you've heard it from an international blogger. It's not just me that says, pay me for exclusivity. He's also preaching what I'm preaching. So most of the time I share these opinions and people think I'm drastic or I'm crazy. So I'm happy that you're here so that they hear from you firsthand. Let's talk about something more exciting. Let's talk about women and dating. You travel a lot.
Yes.
You're always around the world.
Yes.
You always have a beautiful girlfriend somehow, somewhere, at some point.
You're making it sound like I have all these girlfriends. I had two girlfriends since I started vlogging, too.
But I remember, like, both your girlfriends are beautiful. Oh, yes. Both look incredibly stunning. They both look like models, your ex and your current girlfriend. Do you date bloggers purposely? Do you have a thing for beautiful girls that look like models who are bloggers? Or, you know,
I mean, I would say I'd have a thing for beautiful girls, yes, but I think I share that with the majority of men on this planet. No, it really just so happened. I think, to get a little bit spiritual, I think you attract the kind of people that you know, share your points of view and that share what excites you, much like anybody else. Like, you know, look at the regular people that work 9 to 5s, you know, they start dating within the office because you have things to talk about. You have common, like, people you know in common, and you just, there's things to connect. It's really hard to date a girl that's not actually in the creative space and or a freelancer, because I travel so much, and if my girlfriend were to be bound to one place, it gets really difficult. My girlfriend right now is actually doing an acting program in LA for 3 months, and it's hard. I'm in South Africa for 3 weeks, and I would love to for her to have joined me. It would have been a possibility, but it wasn't because of that. So it gets really difficult. And that, in the long run, this is just a 3-month period. If we were talking, you know, this is just her job and there's no end in sight, I don't think I could maintain that.
But I mean, being in your position, I'm sure there's a lot of beautiful women that you meet on your travels around the world at, like, Fashion Week, Dolce & Gabbana Fashion Show. There's beautiful models everywhere. I mean, don't you get tempted? And please be honest, don't you sometimes be like, I wish I could,
I mean, yes and no. To be honest, I appreciate just beauty. I'm okay, like, just looking at beautiful girls. I love that. You know, in my head, yes, I'm like, oh my God, you know, if you were single, you could do this and that. But at the same time, I know myself. And as I said before, I'm an insecure guy. So I know that if I was single, I wouldn't go for it. Unless it would happen somehow.
Have you ever used your social media power to get a girl? So have you ever received a DM from a girl and be like, oh, she's great, let's meet up, let's hook up? Have you ever used Tinder to pick up women? Like,
You know Raya? Have you heard of Raya?
Yes.
Yeah, so I've used Raya before, which kind of is, you know, you use your Instagram to even be part of that.
Yeah.
And then you use that. So I've met a few girls through Raya in the 9-month period or so that I was single in between my girlfriends.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes it's a little shameless. You know, I know a lot of guys and models that have very big followings that just slide into DMs and be like, hey girl, what's up? You know,
yeah.
I'm famous.
I mean, I've done
I'm stopping now.
I have DM'd some girls, be like, I like her. Hey.
Yes. I mean, we've all done it. I'm just saying, I feel like on a regular basis, it gets, I don't know. It's just
messy.
It's kind of lame. Like, it's like the new age equivalent of walking up to a girl in the bar and be like, hey, I have my Lambo outside. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, it's like, it's
hey,
showing,
I've got 40,000 followers.
Exactly.
Check
it's like,
profile.
It's showing off. And I've never been a show off. And like, I don't know. It's, I don't like using it. I have used it. I've tried it before. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't. But, it's an interesting change.
Before we close off, I'd like to ask, you know, where do you think blogging is going? You know, a lot of people will say blogging is dying. I've seen people say, you know, bloggers are going to fade away. But when I think about it, I think bloggers are going to keep readapting, you know, with
right.
Snapchat, with Insta stories. I think bloggers like you as yourself, who are innovative, keep on readapting to what's happening. So where do you think blogging is going if you look at the market?
I don't necessarily have an opinion on where it's going. I'm just preparing for either outcome. I think I could see it disappearing in a certain way. Like, blogs themselves are actually not nearly as important anymore as social media is. But I could also see blogging, you know, like, the audience grows up with you. So who's to say that in 10 years I won't be a daddy blogger, showing people how to stay stylish, but also feeding a baby and while changing diapers. You know what I mean? Like, I think I can see it evolving. Personally, I'm also looking into YouTube right now, because YouTube has been a very stable platform, and back to the point of me wanting to influence people's lives, I think you have more of a relationship and more of an impact on people through video, because they really get to know you and you get to express so much more than in just a photo.
Yeah.
So I think everybody's going to keep evolving. And, you know, it's fashion for one, and it's social media and digital media second, and both industries are always changing constantly.
Yeah.
So I think there's not there's a lot of room for change, and there's so many outcomes. I think we just need to be ready and stay one step ahead and try and be prepared for whatever comes in the future. But in the end, I think the skill sets that you and I developed through social media aren't gonna fade away. You know, there's always gonna be. I don't know. I like to live in the insecurity.
Yeah.
I can't make a 5-year plan because the industry is just barely 5 years old now.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't.
And it changes on a daily basis. And
exactly.
You know, if you stuck to a plan, you find it harder to readapt to what's happening. And I think that's why a lot of magazines have struggled, because they had this set plan and then social media came and switched everything. And only now they're starting to catch up and start moving with the times. Even brands,
yeah.
You know, they never expected it. But Marcel, thank you so much for joining us. I think, you know, this was a very impromptu interview, but I enjoyed your insight. I enjoyed the views that you've shared, and I think a lot of young South Africans will take that into heart, and a lot of them are inspired by your work. I've been receiving tweets, messages of people saying, I love your work, oh my god, he's really in the store. So I'm really, really excited about your future, and I can't wait for us to do some work together and connect the American and South African market in terms of fashion. I think there's a lot to be discovered in South Africa when it comes to fashion and inspiration behind fashion, so I'm really excited.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me here at Cliff Central.
Thank
it was
you.
Awesome talking to you.
In closing, I always have... Oh, wait, there's a question. Hi, Siyabonga and Marcel. I'm a poet who's about to start sharing poetry with others via Instagram, because when I recite my art with friends, really relate. So I want to share with a larger audience who can relate to the emotion and death. Would you say that your social media has brought more good, has hurt your art in some ways? Do you think social media has hurt your art in some ways?
In some ways, yes. In some ways, it's mostly because I like to express myself in various artistic ways. Like I have a high appreciation for minimalism and structure and lines, but that's something that's very different, like something very, very architectural, that's very different from what content works for me. So I haven't given up on the art, but in the end, your following is kind of going to dictate where you're going to go. It's kind of, you know, it is, if you treat it as a brand, you have to listen to your market and you have to listen to your customer. The customer is the most important thing. So again, you're an artist here. And I think as an artist, you have to really be careful not to commercialize your business. For me, I think commerce is the art that I practice for the biggest part. But I think as a poet, you know, just put your stuff out there and be creative and be you. I don't think anybody's gonna change your art if you choose to stay true to it. I could have chosen to keep doing the minimalist stuff and keep that style up, but I didn't want to. For me, it was not the right
thing.
And
also, as a person, you grow. You know, you grow. Your taste palette changes.
Exactly.
You know, your mood changes.
You develop.
I know for a fact that, like, I go through phases where I feel like being minimalist and wearing black and white, but then there's days or times of period where I'm inspired by a certain movement, and I like to reflect that through my style. So I think don't limit yourself to what you can do. And I think it's a fine balance. Balance your art very well and take care of your art, but also at the same time, make it viable for the market that you speaking to. And I think that's the balance you want to strike, and that's something I think you've done really well, where your style has always remained your style. It's evolved very well, but just because now you work with brands, it hasn't changed your style dramatically. You still, brands have,
because
to,
I work with the brands that I used to shop, you know,
exactly,
what I mean?
And you work with brands that fit your style,
right.
So I think that's something very important when considering that. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Siyabonga Bele. This is the Thread Exchange, and if I have to leave you with these words for this week, is search inside yourself and find your true passion and follow it no matter what. Don't care about the risks, just do it. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is the Thread Exchange.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with Sia Bailey. Live on Cliff Central.
Cliffcentral.com.